My name is Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom to four kids, ages 2 through 9, and we are learning how to make joy normal.
My name is Bonnie Landry, and I want to welcome you to season 2 of our podcast, Make Joy Normal. We want to thank everybody for their support and how much you've shared this podcast with your friends and those who you think it would be helpful for. I am a wife, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma. I've been homeschooling for 30 years. My kids are ages 14 to 33. I only have one at home now. I'm a speaker, a writer, a blogger, and I guess we're podcasters now, Elizabeth. And I'm an advocate of joy. So welcome to our podcast.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, Bonnie.
You've got your wine. You're all ready to
go. Yes, husband has the kids. This is a vacation, practically.
Life on Riley, yeah. Amazing. What we used to call that hour away that we get now, back in the day, was like the time we squandered, eh?
All my time was my own. When I think about the stuff I did with my time when I was single, it makes me sad to think that I spent so much time watching TV and not enough. Like, I wish I had spent more time learning a valuable skill or something. I mean,
learn a second language, travel, whatever.
I learned some basic cooking and things like that, but I did a lot of traveling. I'm thankful for that, but way too much TV watching. Anyway. I was thinking today we could talk about a topic that I find comes up a lot in motherhood discussions, especially on social media. And that is this idea that when you become a mother, you lose yourself, or you forget who you are, or you sacrifice, you know, who you really are for the sake of your kids, and that ends up burning you out, and then you become this horrible person. And so in order to be a good mom, you have to like go off for a week and find yourself again, or you have to like, basically it seems like a lot of the time it ends up being time away from your kids equals staying sane, right? And keeping in touch with yourself, not just time away from your kids. Like, everyone needs to get a break. Like, all mothers need a break, you know, daily, probably weekly for sure. But like this idea that you need a side hustle, or you need to have something that's totally unrelated to motherhood that like keeps you intact. And that's not always what people say by any means, but I see that a lot. And I also see a lot of women, single women, expressing this concern,
right,
that they'll lose themselves in motherhood, and that they'll become just like boring women who can only talk about diapers and like their kids' latest funny thing that they said. And I think that is a really common concern, even amongst faithful Christian women who want to be married, want to have kids, maybe even want to stay home. I mean, I remember thinking like I would be super bored, because I had heard so many women say that they were bored staying home with their kids, especially when they were little, that I remember thinking, well, I'm probably going to be really bored because I'm very intellectually curious and I love to learn and think. And I mean, I'm not going to be able to do that in the same way. So I'm going to be really bored. I'm going to need to have some sort of side job or a part-time job or something like that to keep me sane. I have found that to not be true in the least, but
right,
I was really concerned about it. And I didn't have any women in my life that I could really talk to about it who had been there and who had, you know, who had had a joyful, really joyful motherhood, at least not very many. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that concept of losing yourself. And then how do you, first of all, is losing yourself necessarily a bad thing? Secondly, if you do feel like you're drowning in the demands, the quotidian demands of motherhood, how do you kind of rise up from that and not let Satan get in there and convince you that it's your kids that are the problem and motherhood is the problem? What you need is just a significant chunk of time away from them. You know, maybe you need a job, or maybe you need to have, you know, a babysitter come in for several hours each day or something, right, like that, which obviously is not possible for a lot of people. how do you stay afloat when you do feel like you're drowning?
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you have 4 under 4 or something crazy like that, which I know a lot of women have.
So I think that one of the things that we experience in motherhood is a transition period where, you know, we become mothers. If already culturally we're kind of surrounded in moms who, or people, you know, might be relatives, might not be moms, who think that you can't feel fulfilled, which I kind of think is what you're maybe talking about. There's, so there's the fulfillment aspect, and then there's the drowning aspect. To me, those are kind of two different things. So if we can break it down a bit. So
yes,
I think that if we're surrounded with people who think that or have experienced that they don't feel fulfilled through motherhood, I think that's a difficulty that we're going to experience on an ongoing basis. So I think the first thing we need to do is find our people, open ourselves up to be able to spending our day to day with at least some people. If our family's not supportive or not understanding of that idea, that, you know, if you've been kind of raised in that environment, okay, where are the people that would be people who would understand or be obviously fulfilled by the role of motherhood? One of the places that I found that was with La Leche League. You know, early on with my first daughter, I just found that La Leche League was women who desired motherhood and wanted to be spending their day in this role. For me, a lot of that came through actually meeting up with a local La Leche League group. Might be some things that you don't like about La Leche League, but, you know, or you might, you know, be taking your motherhood a different way or whatever. But ultimately, these are people who do find motherhood fulfilling in general. The people that you find there are going to be kind of that ilk. So I think that we have to make an effort to do that. So, for example, joining a Facebook group that would say be, you know, attachment motherhood or gentle parents or stay-at-home moms. More than likely, people who are joining groups like that are likely to be people who are inclined to want to find this fulfilling, even if they're not there yet. That they're going to be looking for support the same way that we might be looking for support. I think that our choice of reading material also is going to really affect how we view motherhood. I don't think motherhood has to be boring at all. I've never been bored as a mom. In fact, I'm guessing you have never either. Like, even though, you know, you thought you were concerned about that. I have a friend who's very sort of really loves to learn also, and really, you know, was really into sciences and whatnot. And her father-in-law said to her when she was expecting her first, you know, are you going to go back to work? And she said, no. He said, well, won't you be bored at home just with a baby? The last thing on earth, you know, any of us are bored. I think we could be lonely. And that's why I think finding your people is so important. Ideally, an actual in-person community, which is why La Leche League groups is a good place to start in terms of just meeting like-minded mothers who hope to find motherhood fulfilling. Also, you know, those online communities, some of them are very, very big. I belong to a couple of attachment parenting groups, and I suspect that you could put it out there. I live in whatever part of the country, and you may get some people, you know, and you may have to drive a little ways, but you at least could start to build some community of actual people who have desire to live the same life as you. We used to joke around because the Leche League group that I was involved in, basically every 5 years, a new homeschooling group would be born. Right? Because these women would bond together and their children would bond together. And, you know, even though we might be from different backgrounds or whatever, we had real respect for the mother-child bond and what was growing there. And then they would inevitably start homeschooling. And there was sort of this blossoming of these homeschooling groups out of the La Leche League group because they were all really like-minded.
I've definitely found that has been one of the most helpful things for me, especially when I'm doing things differently from, say, some of the people in my family or from a lot of people that I know, just generally speaking, to have other people who you can talk to and know that they're not going to try to convince you to do something different or convince you that the way you've chosen to mother is somehow bad, or like that's the problem and you need to change that because you had a hard night of sleep or because you had a bad day with your kids or whatever, they'll just listen and they'll empathize and they're going to encourage you instead of try to convince you out of the choices that you're making.
Yeah. Well, you could just do this or that, put the kid in school, give the kid a bottle, whatever. Yeah. Whatever. You're always going to get a plethora of advice to move you away from what your desires are. So having people supportive, I mean, in an ideal world, it would be our sisters and our mothers and our aunts and our cousins, you know, and people close to us, our people in our neighborhood, but that's not really what happens anymore, right? We don't really have that experience. Maybe that will change over time as more moms stay home and feel fulfilled staying home and that's normalized. Maybe we're part of that bigger picture that we're part of, you know, sort of helping to normalize what this is and the choices that we've made. I'll have to tell you a story actually, because I think it's kind of interesting. So when I had my first, I was 23 when I had my first. And everybody I knew who was my age was going to get a degree of some sort. Most of them were becoming teachers, girls I had gone to high school with and whatnot. I kind of felt like I was the only one having a child, but also sort of like, isn't that quaint? It's kind of how it felt for me. Isn't that quaint? That's okay. I knew what I wanted later. So, you know, there's 19 years between my oldest and my youngest, right? So this whole generation. And so when I was pregnant with Lydia, I would be out and about in my big belly and people would say, oh, is this your first? Because that's the question we ask people, what's your first? And I would say, actually, it's my seventh. And young women, you know, women in their early 20s would say, oh, that's so beautiful. You're so lucky. I really want to have a big family. I was suspicious at the time. Were these the women coming out of sort of latchkey kid era that didn't maybe have a mom present to them? And, you know, I want to stay home with my kids and that sort of thing. And I mean, I think it's really dependent on where you are too, where you live.
Yes.
But I, you know, we live pretty rurally, you know, in small, like sort of a cluster of small towns. And this was in this environment, but it was so lovely to hear that and sort of a real reason to celebrate, I think. And I think that the tides have been turning for sure. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that one time I was out buying maternity clothes. I was pregnant with Lydia and I went up to the till to buy maternity clothes. The woman at the till said, oh, is this your first? How many kids do you have? And I said, oh, actually it's my seventh. And she said, oh my gosh, it's your seventh. And so she kind of says to the other women in the store, there's maybe three or four other women in the store. She goes, this woman is having her seventh baby. Can you believe that? And so this woman standing there, she was probably in her 30s. And she said, this is my first. You are so lucky. I was a bit baffled about it. It was actually my husband who said, I just can't quite wrap my brain around her saying I'm so lucky. And he said, you know, she's in her 30s and she's having her first baby.
I mean, she can't have seven children.
Yeah. And also she's thinking, you're experiencing for the seventh time the wonder of what I'm experiencing right now.
Yeah.
You are so lucky. And I mean, I was that lucky. It gets more miraculous with every child you have. Yeah, those are sort of tangents. But I do think that the tide is turning. But I think it's really dependent on where you live. You know, one of my daughters was having a baby. She lives in a city and she was having her first. And I had happened to bump into somebody and was chatting with them. And they said, oh, how long's her mat leave? And I said, oh, she's staying home. You know, she wants to be a stay-at-home mom. And the woman looked at me like I was not so cuckoo. And she just like, it was like she could not compute what I was saying. Stay-at-home mom, who does that? And she didn't really say anything, but the look on her face was just like bewildered. And I thought, I wonder if that's the difference between kind of living small town place or living in a city, right? I don't know.
I do think that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I think the more highly educated the area that you are in, the more people will balk at the idea of a woman wasting her degree by staying home with her kids, which I think is absurd because, I mean, don't we want the children, like the next generation of kids, to be well-educated by well-educated parents? Like, even if you're sending your kids to school, you're still educating them all the time. And you don't need a college degree to do that. But if you have one, great. Like, that's a blessing to your kids. That's just our utilitarian concept of education. That education is for the purpose of getting a job And if you don't get a job outside the home, then you're wasting your education. And I didn't want to be, I wanted to get married. My dream is to get married right out of college and start having kids, basically to be like in your situation, Bonnie. I ended up teaching for 9 years before I got married, and I'm so thankful for that time, and it was beautiful and it was good, and the Lord worked through it, and I have some beautiful memories of that time. I was so ready to stop teaching. And there was a time in my teaching career where I was like, oh, it's going to be so hard for me to give this up when I get married. By the time I was ready to get married, I was like, oh no, I'm ready. I'm done. I'm blessed to be able to stay home with my kids. I know that that is not a reality for all women, and that many would love to but can't because of financial difficulties, or, you know, their husband can't work, or their husband's job doesn't provide enough for the family, because our world is crazy and living expenses are crazy. And depending on where you live, especially, you know, the cost of living might be just too high for you to be a full-time at-home mom. I mean, I prefer the title homemaker, or homemaker is a really good one, because that's really what you're doing. You're making a home for your children. I think stay-at-home mom has this very, like, it's not a good name, because you're not really staying at home all the time. And it sounds like you're trapped in your house all day with kids. Like, that's what I think people imagine when they hear the term stay-at-home mom. That's not at all how I feel about being with my kids all day. It's a very different experience. It's like being a witness to the growth and development of two unique souls, and getting to be a part of that growth and development and accompanying them on that road. And is it hard? Yes. Is it tiring? Yes. Do I sometimes wish I could just like go somewhere and sleep for 24 hours? Yes. Yeah. But I would not trade it for all the teaching accolades, all the free time, all the sleep. I mean, I would not trade it. And I think, you know, I had people tell me, oh, well, you have to go back to teaching after you have your kids, because you're so gifted as a teacher. You're so good with teenagers. Like, it would be a waste of your talents. God could use you so powerfully, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, because I am not indispensable in the teaching world. God can use plenty of people to reach high school teenagers, high school students in Catholic schools, but I am indispensable in my home. There's no one who could take my place.
If you did, it would be tragic. Like, if somebody had to take your place, it would be tragic, right?
It would be. It would be a tragedy. And, you know, I know that, I mean, there's so many different ways you can make motherhood, you can be creative in motherhood in terms of like making money on the side or helping supplement your family's income or whatever. Like, there's all kinds of ways that you can do that. But I think that I wonder if there is this, that the world has not convinced even very faithful women that
we're so steeped in it, right?
Quote, just being a mom is not enough, because you've lost yourself. You're no longer you. You're just mom.
Yeah.
Well, and we want to be in touch with who we are, you know?
Here's an interesting thing, too, that I think it's important to consider, is that, first of all, when we're thinking about this question, okay, will I be bored? Will I be lonely? Will I be enough? Will it be fulfilling? You know, all that sort of, that's a kind of a bit of a package. That, first of all, we have to, I think, separate how do other people feel and how do we feel. The way other people feel is so, we're very affected by that. And I think that that's something we have to be cautious about. We have to be really, really clear about what it is that we want as we move forward in our life and mature as human beings, right? And I mean, children are a big part of our maturing. We never stop. Maturing is one of those things we never stop doing. We continue to mature as a person and ideally become a better person over the course of whatever years we're given. So we have to look at that. Am I being affected by the people around me, or am I being affected by what's going on in my own brain? And maybe both. It might be both. It might be one might be stronger than the other. But I think it's important to look at those two things separately. Because if we feel in our hearts like, no, I just want to do this. I just want to relax into this. I want to cook and I want to homeschool my kids and I want to bake and I want to have a garden or whatever, you know, all those things that we might sort of think about that would be fulfilling. And I mean, homeschooling in and of itself, if you only homeschool and you don't have any other excess stuff, that's a career option, right?
Yes, you know, it is.
It's a big deal. You're taking on your children's education, so you don't have to have something outside of that. And it can be an enormously creative outlet. But if that's what you want, like in your gut, if you really had to say, okay, I don't want to think about anybody else, what anybody else thinks. I want to think about how do I feel about this? That's one thing. But then thinking about all the other people and how you manage all the other people, that's a whole other ballgame. Ultimately, we have to hold our head high and be able to just say, and sometimes that means there's no point in wearing yourself down.
Sorry, Nico.
There's no point in wearing yourself down debating with other people.
Yeah.
And it came down to just using this phrase over and over again. I really respect the choices you made. I would like you to respect mine. I don't want to debate this with you. End of story. Don't waste your energy. Don't waste your time on debating these things with your family or your friends or whoever, because that can be exhausting. And if you have little children, you're already exhausted. Do you want to feel like you're on the defensive? And, you know, so pick a bag of phrases that you can carry around with you. I actually don't feel any need to defend myself, or I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. I love being at home. Whatever. Pick half a dozen phrases that when somebody, and it's not usually an attack, it's usually people wanting the best for you. So just come up with things that you can say to satisfy their curiosity or their whatever, but also to just shut the conversation down. Don't waste your energy. There might be the odd person that you think, no, I want to go to task with you on this. But, you know, if it's just all the random people in your life and all your family members and all that are just bringing you down, don't waste your time. Hold your head high, come up with your stock phrases that you use and just hit them with the stock phrase, the same as homeschooling, right? Just hit them with your stock phrase. Shut the conversation down. Don't waste your energy.
Do you remember the two British ladies that you had the conversation with, who one of them said she was going to call, she called herself a matriarch when people asked her what she did?
I am a matriarch, Zoe. I know. She's hilarious.
I loved that so much. And I actually told our new pastor, he was like, so what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a full-time mom, but I prefer to be called a matriarch. He thought it was really funny. I was like, yeah, I'm definitely using that one again.
I had this funny conversation. I'll tell you something about Zoe, then I'll tell you a funny story about my grandson who was over this morning. Zoe has just been interviewed for another podcast, actually by an Anglican vicar and his wife who homeschool. And she sent it to me and it's really good. So I'm going to put it in the show notes, actually. So anyone listening to this can listen to this. It's just a great kind of commentary on motherhood. And there's all the, you know, they sort of cover all the different things. It's a delightful conversation. But my grandson was over this morning and he said something about, I can't remember how it came up in conversation, but he said something about, you know, dad's work or grandpa's work, like grandpa's job is that they go to work. My daughter said to him, well, what is Mamie's job? And he goes, well, I think you're the leader. And he goes, no, wait a minute.
Well,
no, wait
said.
A minute. No, your job is to make things. No, wait a minute. Lydia makes things. So no, he's trying to just.
You're the leader.
So if he knew the word matriarch,
you're
I think he would have used
in charge.
It. You're the leader.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you think about yourself, when you first had your first child, what do you think you lost? Like, do you feel like you lost yourself, like a lot of women are worried about? Or how would you describe the transformation or the effects that motherhood had on you personally as you grew and had more and more children.
Right. Okay. So I think starting off, so I was in this very bad situation, an abusive situation when I had my first daughter, right? So I got out of that situation really quickly, but it was a very difficult time in my life that to kind of say, this is how I felt about motherhood. I mean, I threw myself into the Leche League and, you know, various other things. And I that was really good for me. It was such a bizarre time of life for me, kind of getting myself out of that situation that I would say I completely wrapped myself up in motherhood, but I was kind of living this dual life. I had this part of my brain that was like, what the hell do I do now? You know, and kind of freaking out and panicking. And the other part of me just saying, this is who I am and this is what I'm doing. I am a mother now and I need to take care of this child. And that was the really, really grounding force in my life. And in some ways, I think some very, very good things came out of that, because I don't know how I would have coped if I hadn't had that grounding force. Okay, so that's probably not what most people are experiencing when they've...
Because that was before you became Catholic, so you didn't have any faith or anything.
So I mean, it was motherhood was a very grounding catharsis for me at the time, and I'm very grateful that I had that. But I would say that because of my upbringing, and I know I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but because my dad, I have a wonderful dad, and he's was so honoring of motherhood, like the way he treated my mom, spoke to my mom, honored motherhood in general, was so just so integrated into my soul that I mean, I feel like that's the reason why I'm Catholic today, is because my dad was just so honoring of that. The woman's place is so valuable, and raising children is the greatest gift we can give to society, and doing a good job of it. And he lived it too. He wasn't lip service. He lived it. You know, he treated my mom with honor. He respected motherhood and, you know, people who stayed home with their kids. He was valued that. Born in the early 60s, you know, my parents had, my brother was 61, I was 63, my younger brother was 67. So this is at a time when the sexual revolution, and my parents were very conservative people. So all this was, I must have felt in a way like the world was crumbling around them as a really young conservative couple having children and very much faced with this sort of a culture that was bucking all that society had been based on to that point. And of course there were problems in society. We can't deny that. And there was problems, you know, even the sexual revolution that came out of some things that were problems, but you know, the pendulum tends to swing from side to side. But I had this beautiful upbringing, and I would just make a shout out to dads here. Allow your daughters to be honored in motherhood as if that's the choice that they make in their life. That's honored and revered. Of course, if you want a career, that's a viable option. But if we honor career above motherhood, that's setting the culture up for a problem. And I think that my story was particularly unique, because at a time when most women, you know, their parents were saying, get a career, you don't want to be stuck at home like I was, and all of that. You know, and if that's how women felt, that's sad. And I wish it wasn't so. Yeah. But at the same time, we want to provide that environment for our children, not that they must be stay-at-home moms, but that being a stay-at-home mom is an honorable, beautiful, worthy thing to do, right? And so we don't want to set our daughters up to feel like this is what you have to do in order to feel this way. And we just had a conversation with another couple who are sort of more our age, about their kids, and they were saying that their daughter has always, you know, she's going to university and whatnot, but she's always kind of had this desire for just motherhood and saying, you know, and the parents obviously beautifully honor that as well, even though they are both career people and their daughter is, you know, in university, and they encourage her to do that, but they also are totally embracing the fact that she doesn't really want a career. And what a lovely thing for somebody to grow up in, that this is your career. This is what you're choosing. And it's completely a beautiful choice. So, you know, something to be aware of, dads, as you're moving forward. And, you know, my husband, I feel like, has had really beautiful influence on honoring motherhood in the way that I felt honored, you know, and that my daughters feel honored in what they do. It's important. So, did I feel lonely? Did I feel, sorry, what was the word you used? It's just
lost, yeah, that you've lost. Lost
so no, I felt very grounded by motherhood. I think that as I had a couple more kids and as the impact of motherhood really settles in and you've got two or three really young kids, that you can feel you can feel completely overwhelmed. And I did feel that way for sure, that okay, maybe I'm not up to this. Maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm just not enough. And I think every mother in the world feels that way. To this day, I feel like I'm not enough. And the reality is, you're not.
Yeah.
Right? We have to just get over ourselves and know that grace fills in the cracks and we just have to do the best we can with what we have. I came into it not being enough. I will never be enough. And I'm not supposed to be enough. Being part of living the day to day and acknowledging that I'm not enough and that I can only do the best that I can do. And and be prayerful and move forward, right? And try to grow every day.
I think so many people in our culture stop at two kids because it is so overwhelming in the early years. And if you think that having more kids is just going to be like having your first two over and over and over and over again, then yeah, it would be pretty scary. Yeah, but that's not what it is.
I've said this exact thing to so many people. Because if we think that that's what motherhood is, you know, that's intense. But once you have a 5-year-old or a 6-year-old and you've got a 2-year-old and a baby, you know, I met a woman, and I think I had 3 kids at the time. I met this woman who had 9 children. And it was at a Catholic homeschool conference, right? And I was just like, wow, how do you do it? You know, you look so sort of together. And she said, you know, my first two, or that was really, really hard. And I had my third and I started to feel kind of like, okay, I think I'm going to get my feet under me here. I had my fourth and it was getting easier. Well, my fifth and everything from then on was a cakewalk. That is the reality of it. And it sounds ridiculous. And I mean, there's different challenges, right? You're dealing with teenagers and babies at the same time and all of that. But you've relaxed so much with small children that the issues you're dealing with are more the new issues of having older children. You're learning a whole new path of parenting, but this parenting has gotten easier and you start to think, okay, sometimes you're only home with your couple little kids and you think, wow. You know, so life really, really changes. And it does get easier. And I know it sounds ludicrous, but it is something that gets easier with the more kids you have and the mean age. So there's this tipping point. And for me, that happened because my oldest daughter was 4.5 years older than her next sister. The tipping point happened when I had my fourth because she was 10. So she had just turned 10 and he was 4.
Perfect age for a baby.
Yeah. And so suddenly, she could hold the baby while I had a shower and I could rely on her. It wasn't like leaving a 5-year-old with a baby while you have a shower. And then I could get her to, you know, actually be helpful. It wasn't sort of like keeping her fingers busy while I was making supper, that she could actually chop vegetables with me. I could put the baby in the car seat and she could actually, you know, hurry along the process at the same speed that I was doing it almost. And things like that changed. And then, so suddenly then you have a couple more kids and suddenly the people who can get themselves dressed and put on their own shoes are and want to outweigh the people who can't. So suddenly you've
thanks
got
for adding that kids. And want
yeah,
to.
Exactly. So there's no debate, you know, there's no just get your shoes on. That you're suddenly, okay, there's 4 people in this house who can get their own shoes on, get themselves out the door. I don't have to be thinking about them anymore. And there's only 2 people who actually need help with their shoes and getting their coat on and kind of getting scurried out the door. And then suddenly somebody can drive. And then suddenly somebody can watch the kids while you run to the grocery store. Or somebody can drive and run to the grocery store for you. There's just this tipping point where suddenly everything changes. You know, I mean, I don't know, it was maybe 5 years ago or something. Suddenly we had 2 people who couldn't drive and 4 people who could, and including Albert and myself, 6 people who could drive and 2 people who couldn't. And it was like, wow, okay, there's not even enough cars for the people who want to go places.
Yeah. What
so
a problem
we,
to have.
These years, nothing is as hard as these years when you have 2 or 3 small children.
Yeah. And I remind myself of that on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And I try to keep my expectations of myself really, really reasonable.
Feel like you're drowning. Keep your your space very small that you worry about. No, it's not the time to try and get your bedroom under control. One of the things in the Leche League book that really struck me, The Womanly Art of Breastfeeding, said, you know what? It's not even healthy to make your bed. Fold your blankets back and let the bed air out. I thought, okay.
I like that.
Okay. You know, and minimizing clothing, like minimize your wardrobe. It's not going to last forever, you know, and you end up liking that way anyways, but minimize, you know, your kids really, you know, 3 pairs of pants and 6 shirts, a couple of pairs of shoes. That's all they need. Have a pair of shoes for church and a pair of gumboots or whatever. We can just really minimize how we live in these years, knowing that this is temporary, right?
Yeah, it's just a season, and it's a fleeting season. I mean, I'm already seeing my oldest will be 4 in November, and he is changing all the time. He's wanting to do more and more things by himself. He's needing me less and less in some ways. And my baby is getting to be a toddler, and I'm already sad about that because he's the cutest baby ever.
That's when baby fever hits, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so, you know, then I'll, God willing, have another one. It really is, like, it does crawl by sometimes, but most of the time I just look up and I'm like, how did this child that I gave birth to become, like, this little infant become this almost 4-year-old? Like, how did that happen? I mean, it just, I cannot believe it. And I think, just from my experience, motherhood has made me more fully myself. Like,
if
I really
don't fight
feel
it,
like...
You don't fight it, right?
Yeah, I feel like I've surrendered to what the Lord is asking me of me in this season of my life. Not perfectly by any means, but as much as I can. I have just been amazed at how I have been purified, humbled, and also how much I've changed for the better. I mean, I am so much more laid back than I have ever been in my entire life. And I am so much more adventurous, so much more open to new things, so much more fun, dare I say, than I ever was before I had 2 little boys.
And you probably feel challenged and fulfilled, right?
Oh, yeah. I feel super challenged. My creativity is always being used. My intellect is always being used. And I do feel incredibly fulfilled. I mean, watching my sons grow and develop has been one of the most intellectually satisfying experiences of my life, not to mention spiritually and, you know, emotionally satisfying and challenging at the same time. But I just, part of it is I did wait so long. I mean, I waited so long to get married. I mean, I was 33. I know there are people who wait longer, but it was a long time for me. So it was just like, why wouldn't I embrace it with everything I had? I just have not felt the need for anything else. And maybe someday when all my kids are teenagers and I'm, you know, everything's ticking along really smoothly and they can all kind of teach themselves and homeschool and everything, and I don't have any little kids, maybe then the Lord will open up a new path, something that he wants me to do.
You can start a podcast.
I can start a podcast. Yeah.
Or that's what I did.
Like, one of the things I've always thought I would really love to do someday is be a childbirth educator or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not, now is not the time.
Yeah.
And there was a time when my son, my oldest, was a baby, where I felt like I saw that I could, if I wanted to, I could have a podcast, I could be more present on my blog, I could be more present on Instagram, I could do the whole influencer Catholic famous thing, which wouldn't be real famous, it would be like, you know, Catholic famous, so
right.
It wouldn't really be that big
it's
of a
like,
deal.
It's like homeschool famous.
Yeah. Then I could do that, but it was going to require me to have lots of childcare, not, you know, like basically I was going to have to reprioritize. And what I realized was I don't want to do that. Like, and I don't feel like that is really what the Lord is asking of me right now. And maybe for some women that's, they have a different experience, but for me, I was like, you know, yes, we could have more financial freedom if I worked a side job or if I was making money via advertising or something like that for a podcast. Yes, we could have, you know, a much looser budget. We could have all these financial benefits of me working, but and this is a really hard thing for me because I grew up in a wealthy family. I really had to have this come to Jesus moment where I was like, what's more important to me, the extra money in the budget or what I feel like the Lord is asking of me? You know, I eventually was like, you know what? I told all the people that I was kind of in conversation with about potentially doing XYZ speaking event or podcast or writing or whatever, that this is just not the season of my life for doing that. A friend of mine who has 6 kids, she had a bout of postpartum depression after one of her children and was really feeling like she wasn't doing enough for the church or for the world because she was just homeschooling her kids.
Right.
And she was like, how does so-and-so Catholic influencer do it? All the things she does. Like, I can't believe how she just does it all. And right. I happen to know this Catholic influencer personally. And I was like, no, she does not do it all.
Yeah.
She has a babysitter. She uses screens a lot more than I know you're comfortable with. So it wouldn't really be a possibility for you to live that way anyway. Like, she doesn't do it all. Right. But we think these women are doing it all. And the reality is that any woman who has some sort of side hustle or job or influencing account is getting help somewhere. Like they're outsourcing something and maybe they're totally fine with outsourcing that thing. And that's their, like what God is asking of them. But I knew it wasn't what he was asking of me. Like, I didn't have any peace about it.
That's the thing. We really have to reflect on, okay, where do I have peace about this? Or no, that matters, right?
Part of it was I wanted to have something I could show. Like, something that could be measured. Something that could be measured. Something that other people could look at and see, oh, that's a cool thing that you're doing. I had to let that go. And I remember recently, not too long ago, Christian had a conference and I went with him to Dallas and we stayed with some friends of his who they have a little boy who's 18 months old. She works, the mom works part-time and they have a babysitter who comes in part of the time. When she realized that I sleep with my kids and still nursing the baby throughout the night and all these things, she was like, how do you do that? Have this like writing that you do and all this like other Catholics. She was just under the impression that I was doing all these other things. And I was like, I don't do any of this.
It's funny. I know that I took a long break from writing. When I had my fourth, I did a lot of writing and magazine articles and things like that. It was becoming this thing that was hanging over me, right? I mean, I wanted to do it. I wasn't under contract with anybody or anything. I wanted to do it, but it was pulling me away because I'd be trying to write and I'd be, it's kind of a clue. If you bark at your kids or feel irritated by your kids, because even it's something really good, like writing for a Catholic magazine or learning the piano. If you can't do it without charity, it's probably not the right season. If you can do it and still be kind, great, right?
Yeah.
But if you can't, that's a really something you have to really look hard at, is that, you know, I can take a break from this for a while. And, you know, knowing that your life isn't going to be like this forever, that's a huge bonus to know, to bear that in mind.
Well, one thing that I remember from your book, Revolution of Mercy, that I would love for you to just touch on briefly because we've got to wrap up.
Yeah, then we'll probably wrap up.
Is when you said that every mother needs to have some time away at least weekly where she can remember that she is first and foremost a daughter of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been so powerful for me. Yeah. Because I do take that time every Saturday morning. I go, and usually I go and pray. Sometimes I go to confession first and then pray. It's a very special time for me. It's so important for my life and for my kind of rejuvenation each week. When you said that in your book, I was like, that is what I'm doing when I leave. It's remembering that I am a daughter first.
Yeah.
And then a mother.
Yeah, I think I found that out years ago. I think probably about around the time I had my fourth, that I just found I was trying to grab time away all the time. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was always trying to kind of think of ways I could get away and feeling frustrated because they were never very satisfying. Okay, I'm just going to joke about locking ourselves in the bathroom. But I mean, it is a reality. Like, okay, I just need to get away from it. And I thought, okay, I think if I plan time away, I'm an attachment mom. I would always take my babies with me.
Yes.
Until a certain age when I felt like I could go for an hour or two and they would be happy without me. It was one of those things that was a lifesaver, that planned time away prevents you from chasing time all the time to get alone or to get that minute to think or to clear your head. Because you think, okay, you know what? I can get through this. Saturday is just 2 days away, right? I can get through this. And I think it just eliminates that intense sort of wanting to, because the reality is we do need some time to clear our head, right? We do. And appreciate what we have and sort of see things in perspective. For some women, that might be that they go for a 20-minute walk when their husband gets home from work. Like, it can play out differently for different people. We do need a little bit of time to clear our head. For me, once a week, for a couple of hours, 2-3 hours, that was what I needed. But for other women, it might, you know, might play out to like a hot bath at night or time that's planned. So this is when I get my moment so that I don't go crazy.
That is, and for me, I have to make sure it's time that is leisurely and not just spent doing chores or work that I could do other times, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, I almost always did that out of the house because I just couldn't, most of us can't be in our house and think, oh, I'm going to take a couple of hours and do nothing. We just, because we see, oh, if I just throw that laundry in, oh, if I could do some, oh, when the kids aren't here, I could, you know, make some freezer meals.
Yeah. No. You got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You got to go somewhere.
Yeah,
for sure. Thank you so much, Bonnie, for sharing your wisdom.
Oh, fabulous.
It's really helpful.
You're so welcome. So God bless. Have a great week. And we'll check in with you in a week or so.
All right.
Okay. Take care.